Well, the last time I was with you, I took time to start a subject that requires tremendous time and attention. It's an area that upon Christ's return, a lot of time and energy is going to go into reprogramming people. We took the time to go through two of five different ways that we can and should convey love to our mate. So this is part two of my series and the final of the two parts, titled, How Well Do You Show Love in Your Marriage? How well do you show love in your marriage? Now, for the sake of refreshing our memories, the two areas that I stressed the last time I was with you were, number one, agape love, which is unconditional, unselfish giving. It is essential in order for a marriage to be successful. And the second that I shared with you was the love of belonging. The love of belonging. We saw that God created us with the need to belong. This is the area that if you talk to anyone who has lost their spouse, they really feel this one a lot. I've had this conversation with my mother at different times as well. You know, you feel like you've kind of lost your place a little bit because you've lost your other half. You've lost your partner, and so you know, you're trying to figure out where exactly do you belong or fit, I don't want to be a fifth wheel. There's all these couples doing this, and there's that whole concept there as well. The love of belonging is a very important part of marriage, for sure. Now, although these two that I gave the last time I was with you could perhaps be considered the legs upon which a marriage stand, these next three that I'll be discussing in today's message are truly necessary for a couple to experience all aspects of love and appreciation for one another. Now, it takes all five to build what God wants to see in every one of our marriages. Now, the first sermon that I gave, I said, you know, you can certainly take what I was sharing there and apply in your life in many ways outside of, if you're not married, or you at this time, then there's certainly a lot there that still appeals and it's certainly what we want to practice and live. And to a certain degree, that is part of what we'll talk about here. But much of what we're talking about or I'll talk about today really does pertain specifically to those who are married. So first of all, number three then, this will be point number three, is the third showing love in marriage is the love of cherishing. The love of cherishing. Now, the love of cherishing in Greek is philia, which is P-H-I-L-E-O. To value highly or hold in high esteem is what cherish means. Philia is used in the New Testament to designate brotherly love, fondness, affection, and cherishing. So here we can see, this is certainly something as well, that we would exhibit or should exhibit to others outside of our mate, but it certainly is a vital part within the relationship of husband and wife. Now physically, I'm assuming and certainly hoping that your mate is the most treasured person in your life. He or she should also be the most treasured spiritually after God. Now, when I say treasured, perhaps it would be good for me to put it this way. Can you think of something that you treat with special care? Perhaps your car. As you know, I just recently bought a new car for us. And, you know, when you get a new car, I don't worry or fret about it, but I'm smart enough to know it's not going to be pleasant when I get that first ding or scratch or dent. Or you know as well, if you've been in that situation, there's something about until you get that first one, oh, this is wonderful. Then you get that first one, just kind of, oh. Now, Colleen has had many opportunities to drive the car, by the way, and she said, I'm going to drive it until you get a scratch or ding in that thing first. Okay. Anyhow, Perhaps for some, it's your electronics, your plants, your books, your collection of dolls, your collection of video games, comic books, sports cards, your furniture, perhaps a coin collection. With the exception of plants, all of these obviously are inanimate objects. Now, here's my question. How much more should we treasure or cherish our mate as opposed to these other objects? Some people really treasure their collection of whatever it is that they have. Unfortunately, too many people cherish that, or perhaps their job, more than they do their spouse. What a terrible and frustrating situation that must truly be, not to mention how wrong it is. Now, as with all forms of love, you cannot get philia. You give it. You give love. Our Heavenly Father and our elder brother express both agape and filial love towards one another. Turn with me to John 3. Let's see both terms used here in John's gospel account. John chapter 3. And here in John 3, notice verse 35. We read, "The Father loves the Son and has given all things into His hand." Now, the use of the term loves here in this verse is agape. But if we notice chapter 5 and verse 20, we read, "For the Father loves the Son and shows Him all things that He Himself does, and He will show Him greater works than these, that you may marvel." The use of the word love or loves here is filio. Now, by the way, Strong's defines filio this way: to be a friend, for example, to have affection for, denoting personal attachment as a matter of sentiment or feeling. According to Strong's, agape is more of the heart and filio is more of the head. But you need both to have a healthy, fully healthy relationship with your spouse. It should be clear to us that for the kind of complete love God expects us to have and express towards both mate, or to our mate, requires both agape and filio. Now, in fact, it'd be fair to say they are or should be intertwined. Let's think about how we cherish our mate. What is it exactly? Well, cherishing is sharing. And sharing is this way, in this way, is affectionate. Again, this isn't selfish, rather it's the opposite of selfish. So when I say it's sharing, it's important that we understand simply sharing with our mate something we really want them to change because it is bugging us could hardly be called cherishing. Let's return to Romans in Romans chapter 12, and let's read what cherishing looks like. What does it look like? Romans chapter 12. Now, keep in mind what we're about to read here, as we will see, certainly was written so that we would treat all people this way. But I also want us to think, since we're talking about the subject of marriage here, how this fits within your relationship with your spouse. Romans chapter 12 and verse 10. "Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another." One of the challenges that I often find in a couple that is struggling in their marriage is that they really are not giving preference to the other. They've become uptight about something. They're frustrated about something. They're disappointed about something. They might even be angry about something, and it's because they did this. They're not really cherishing that person in that moment in time, are they? Paul describes the love of cherishing as brotherly love. Brothers share. They don't hold back from each other. Now, when I say don't hold back, somebody hear that and say, if they heard nothing else, well, I'm not going to hold back. Let me tell you, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about they share. They're open with one another. Some people, you may have, I'm sure we can all relate to this. Some people have a exterior that is a little more of a wall, and it's hard to get past that. They might be polite, they might be nice, they might be all the things that they would feel and that God would expect us to be, but there's a wall there. Others, there's no wall. Now, when you're talking about your spouse, there should certainly not be a wall. Now, you might say, well, somebody needs more downtime than another or more privacy than another or whatever. Okay, that's no problem. We're all different wiring with personalities. But consider what it is that we are to do and what's being described here in verse 10. I implore you to really think about this concept as you consider your marriage. Marriage is definitely not about getting the upper hand, or at least it shouldn't be. In a healthy marriage relationship, what is expressed here in verse 10 should be evident to anyone that might be looking at your marriage and from the outside. Verse 10 describes philia, a real cherishing of another person. Now, in biblical times, married couples affectionately referred to each other as sister or brother. Let's go to Song of Solomon, chapter 4. Now, I mentioned, I believe, last time, the Song of Solomon is not a book that we turn to very often, and frankly, when you read it, it doesn't take you long to figure out. It's probably not a lot of times you're going to turn to it in the middle of a sermon. And for those of you that have read it, which I would think is most everybody here, you know exactly what I'm saying. However, there are times, and there's certainly material here that's very appropriate, i.e., what subject we're talking about today certainly fits here. In Song of Solomon chapter 4 and verse 10, we read, "How fair is your love, my sister, my spouse? How much better than wine is your love and the scent of your perfumes than all spices?" Now, in sports, they say that a tie is like kissing your sister. After reading this verse and thinking about the usage of the word sister, that expression takes on an altogether new meaning. But here's the point. God wants us to see our spouse in a light that most married people, frankly, do not see. Also as our brother or our sister. Now, I've heard many times over the years, I mean, let's face it, if you think about it, it doesn't take us long to figure out. We know we want to be in God's family forever. Well, we also want our spouse, I would hope, to be in God's family forever. And in that sense, it is very much a brother-sister relationship. It's more than that, too, but that's part of the relationship. Now, I've heard many times over the years, blood is thicker than water. And the implication is families, i.e. mother, father, brother, sister, stick together. And sometimes what they have done is do that sticking together over sticking together with their husband or wife. That's a problem. That should never happen. Fellow family members, that's not of God. And what we're reading here should make this clear. Let me ask you a question. How much sharing do you do with your mate? You just think about this in your own life, your own situation. How much sharing do you do? You ever have those times? I'm assuming I'm not the only one this happens to. I'm quite certain this happens everywhere. You know, and you're sharing something like, and your spouse says, "Well, you never told me that." "Oh, I forgot to tell you that." Okay, that kind of thing happens all the time. But how much just by general nature and what you do and what you seek to do and in the scope of filio and so on, do you really share with your mate? What is it that you find yourself doing with your time? Do you share it together? Do you find that most of your quote-unquote free time is spent out with the guys, if you're a guy, or shopping with the ladies or the girls, if you're female? Perhaps your time is with the kids more than with one another. I do hope that as we read from the Bible and we consider what God intended, we realize that we might need to make changes in order to have what it is that God desires. Now, I can remember playing in sports leagues with guys that played in different league almost virtually every night. You know, maybe softball one night, bowling the next night, volleyball the next night, and so on. It's like, I don't know how they how they have a marriage relationship that's particularly good. I mean, if I played once a week in a league somewhere, I would go and enjoy and play, but then I would go back home after that. I wasn't out doing it every night, for sure. How do you treasure your time with your spouse if you're not with them? And again, that doesn't mean you can't do things separately and that there are things that you might like that they don't and vice versa. That's not what I'm saying at all. That's certainly fine. But our time and our relationship should be too valuable to waste. Sharing is doing things together. Perhaps invite your mate to share a hobby. Now, of course, when do so, pick something that, you know, would at least appeal. I think it would be a rather vain attempt. But cherishing it to try and walk or talk my wife into joining something that I want to do but that she has no interest in. I don't really envision us becoming dueling drummers, for example. That's not sharing, Filio. Filio is making an effort to work together on projects and being there for one another. Sharing, sharing, sharing. When sharing in the way God intended, you find that you have fun together. Yes, even doing something that at one time was not fun, necessarily perhaps to do together, can become fun as we grow in love for one another. You know, there's certain things that I can think of that I would do with Colleen that I was not so excited about doing when I was younger. And that's more a statement of me learning how to become more mature, frankly. Sharing is also communicating with your mate. Communicating is huge. Now, once again, there's communication and then there's communication, right? Let me explain. Often wives will say, well, you know, my husband just doesn't talk to me. He just doesn't understand. I'm not saying this is accurate, but it is a general rule. I think we would all agree that women are more expressive and they tend to be more verbal than we men. There are exceptions to that. You know, what's the old saying? Something about men use 20,000 words a day and or a week, and women 40,000 with gusto 160. So, you know, I mean, there's just a fundamental difference in men and women as a general rule. God made us that way. So guess what he intended for us to do? Learn how to talk to each other and communicate with each other. Which takes what? Love, care, concern, work. So sometimes the wife might say, well, my husband just doesn't talk to me. He just doesn't understand. Meanwhile, the husband might be saying something like, all she does is talk, talk, talk. Or even worse, nag, nag, nag. I'm tired of all the talking. Well, obviously, a couple in that particular condition isn't communicating effectively. I'd like for you to go about or think about what I'm going to tell you right here now. Effective communication does not start with either listening or speaking. True communication, like true love, starts with giving outgoing concern. It is a mental frame of mind that says, I'm interested in what they are, and I want to make sure I'm dialed in and tuned in with them. It's too valuable not to be. Now, that's where my mind needs to be before we ever start with the conversation and the listening and the speaking. I know I've said this many times over the years. You know, if you go to a sports bar, or you go somewhere in a restaurant to eat, and the TV's on there, I need to be, if I'm going to be really involved in my wife's conversation, I need to be where the TV's there. Because if it's there, I might have one eye here and one ear here, and I got one eye and one ear kind of going over there. That's not going to be particularly effective or good. Here's the difference. Too many people are all too busy trying to get others, their mate included, to understand them. If they could just understand me, things would be a whole lot better. When in reality, we should all be seeking to understand our mate. There's a difference. One is focused from and driven by get. The other's focused on and driven by give. If you think about it, this is the difference between the give way and the get way. Now, I'd like to drive home the point I'm making by sharing some headlines from a magazine that ran for 72 years before it closed its doors in 2004. And it was called YM, which was short for Young and Modern. It was a magazine designed for teens and young women. I hung on to it because this is such a good example of what so many magazines for years have been publishing. Here we are, 2023. I hung on to this from 2004. And we have gone, by the way, in one direction ever since what I'm about to read to you. And I think we could all conclude that it is the same direction, not in a good direction, but a continual direction of what I'm about to share with you. All right. Love quiz. Should you trust him? Score cool ways to make him yours. Here's an article titled, Sneaky Ways to Win His Heart. With your trickery tactics, you'll have the cutie completely under your control. Guys are like turtles. If they know you're after them, they retreat into their shells. Be slick and he'll never know what hit him. Okay, now, understand, I get, they're trying to be clever, they're trying to draw and so on. But I want you to think about this in contrast to how God thinks and operates. Is there any reason why somebody who practices this might not end up with the same relationship quality that somebody who's pursuing what God says will end up with? Okay, let me just share a couple of things here from the YM readers confess their sneakiest moves. I saw a really cute guy at a meeting about bringing the AIDS quilt to my school. He was on the committee and I needed an excuse to talk to him, so I made up some totally ridiculous question about the project and called him. We wound up dating for a while. Lisa, 19, from Baltimore. Here's one. I was in the school musical with a guy I had a huge crush on. I asked him if he would rehearse with me because there was one scene I just couldn't get right. Of course, it was the kissing scene. Elaine, 15, from New York City, New York. Okay, so that just gives you a little dose of what I'm talking about here. After reading those headlines, I ask you this. What does any of that have to do with cherishing someone? What a difference. These headlines are all about getting someone else and taking advantage. No wonder so many relationships struggle. People are being sold a narrative that promotes selfishness and leads to heartache and destruction. Another magazine article title was, Why Some Women Can't Resist the Lure of Forbidden Passion. An article from another magazine is titled, If Your Neighbor's Marriage Looks Too Good to Be True, Look Again, It Probably Is. This stuff just depresses me to even think about when I read the headlines. Now I'm going to read one really short one here to you from a magazine entitled First for Women. Now this goes back some time again, but you'll get the point and what I want to share. It's called I Wish I'd Taken Things Further. After dieting like a madwoman for 2 years, I managed to get my weight down to 130 pounds, 25 pounds lighter, and I was absolutely thrilled. I joined a gym, and soon everyone was telling me I looked great. Everyone, that is, except my husband, Ron. More than anything, I wanted my husband to be proud of me, but he never even mentioned my transformation, although it was so obvious. I didn't say anything to him about it, but I agonized and suffered inwardly until one day I just decided, forget Ron, it's time to get to know Phil. I'd met Phil at the gym. He had a great body. You'd expect of someone who spent hours lifting weights. Pretty deep stuff, by the way. We'd often go for a drink at the end of our workouts, having long conversations about nothing. Then one day he asked me straight out, cool as a cucumber, you ever consider having an affair? I giggled nervously. I don't think so. Why? I walked with him to the parking lot in silence, my knees weak, my heart pounding hard enough to have a heart attack. I knew what I wanted, and 90% of me said to go for it. In his car, he put his arms around me. Something in me froze. I couldn't do it. It was as simple as that. I couldn't cheat on Ron. I've got to get home and get the kids their dinner, I said to Phil. Then I broke away from him and left. To this day, I've really regretted not going any further. Ron still ignores me, so why did I pass up a chance for a little excitement? Could have changed my life. But marriage is forever, and you can't ever run away from your wedding vows. Okay, now, besides the, frankly, there's several things come to my mind that could easily take off and go from there. But besides the obvious, yeah, you read something like that. Here's what most people don't realize today. According to what God teaches in Scripture, she was already having an affair. She just didn't act out the physical part. But she was already there here, wasn't she? Something I remember, I don't have this in my notes here, but let's turn over to Matthew 5 and just take a look at this verse, because I remember my father making sure that I read this when I was a teenager, and he made sure I read it a number of times because he wanted me to understand something that was very important for me to understand. Here's Jesus Christ in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, verse 28. I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Most people would tell you today that until you actually do act on it physically all the way through, that you're okay. God teaches something very different. I mentioned a little while ago that cherish means to highly value. When I read something like this, it seems rather obvious to me that the woman I was reading about in the article there most certainly does not value her husband highly. And for that matter, it seems pretty clear he didn't value her particularly highly either, at least not in her mind. Now, I trust we can understand with clarity what I have just read to you is nothing short of selfish, damaging, and frankly, of Satan. He's the one that would love to get everybody, all of us, to read that and not see anything wrong with it. Yeah, she should have, because after all, look what how he treats her. It's the opposite of how God wants us thinking. What this magazine article doesn't realize is that these two were, again, already having an affair. She was already cheating on her husband. Husbands and wives, please value your mate highly. Learn to understand the give way by asking God to help you. It's important we learn what's involved in this so that we can see how far out there this type of thinking that I just read about here in this article really is. Seek to understand what your mate wants to share rather than to get your mate to understand. I'm not saying that you won't talk about things to say, honey, here's where I'm coming from. I would really like you to be able to understand where I'm coming from. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. You're going to have conversations like that. But what I'm talking about is coming at this from an angle of, I just got to get them and then fill in the blank, instead of, wait a minute, I need to be thinking about what's their need, what's their desire, what is it that I need to understand about them? Now, this approach to communication will open up many new opportunities for sharing. I found an Elbert Hubbard quote that I found rather telling concerning getting in a marriage opposed to giving. Quote, "The trouble with many married people is that they are trying to get more out of marriage than there is in it." Think about that for a moment. They're trying to get something out, not realizing that you get more when you actually invest by giving in, giving to the relationship. Cherishing also includes touching, not groping, but touching. In a cherishing relationship, there is neither one extreme nor the other. Your marriage is missing a great deal without that. And if you classify it something as the untouchables, then that's also not good. Couples often touch too much when they're dating, for any teens that are in here, younger ones, but appear to be handcuffed after they get married. Lovers love to touch. It sends the message that I love you. It tells your mate you're important to me. I cherish you. And likewise, the lack of touching conveys exactly the opposite. Give your mate a warm hug in the morning. Sit close together at home or in the car. I guess you can't sit in the car like you used to. Back when I was first dating, or when I was young enough back in the day, and when Colleen and I got engaged, I had one of those little bench seat deals. It wasn't the separate buckets, and she got over here next to me. It was kind of nice. I like that. Can't do that anymore, I guess, because I don't have any vehicles like that anymore. You know, bucket seats. I guess you could sit as far apart in the windows, or you could sit a little closer in between. But, you know, sit next to each other. It tells your mate, you know, you're important. They're important. Most of you are probably familiar with the story about King Midas. You remember everything he touched turned to gold? That's what he wanted. I want all the gold, and everything he would touch just instantly turned into gold. Well, as you know in the story, he became sad in fairly short order. Because if everything turns to gold, what do you really have? You don't have a lot left at that point. You're certainly not going to have any kind of valuable relationships. You don't have anything really worth keeping when it's all said and done. Don't even have anybody to share with. Well, in this case, the loving touch turns everything to love, and that's not a bad thing. Share with your mate. Communicate. Reach out. Touch. And you will give Filio the love of cherishing. All right, a fourth way to love in our marriage is through Eros, which is romantic love. Eros, Eros. God inspired a whole book of the Bible, as I've already alluded to, the Song of Solomon, to describe the proper kind of romantic love in marriage. And the first time you read that book, you're kind of, I don't know, I can't speak for you, but I remember the first time I read through, I thought, what is this? This is completely different than everything else that's written in the Bible. No two ways about it. And some of the stuff I was like, huh? It took some time to even begin to appreciate and understand what's even being shared there. I don't know when the last time you went through that book was, or if you have ever done it with your mate, but if it has been a while, perhaps it's time to go through it once again. There's another story in the Bible that jumps to mind along these lines, and it's found in Genesis chapter 29. Let's go back there. Genesis chapter 29. Now, we'll be very familiar with this as soon as we start reading this. Genesis chapter 29, beginning in verse 15. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. And Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your daughter, younger daughter. And Laban said, well, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Now, this is, of course, the story of Laban and Jacob. And Laban, in that story, it took quite a turn, as we well know, because Laban tricked Jacob, and Jacob ended up serving 14 years total for Rachel. But I'd like you to note in particular what's shared in verse 20. Those 7 years seemed but a few days to him. Why? Because of the love he had for her. Only romantic love could make 7 years seem like days. Jacob was high on Eros. The bottom line is this. Romantic love is real, and we really need to express it to our mate. In many cases, wives have little trouble understanding Eros. Quite often, they may even say to their husband that they would really like more romance. Some are starving for romance. Sadly, all too often, husbands tend to ignore romance and do not fulfill their wives' needs in this way. I don't even know where to begin. You know what? I remember early on, I was not nearly as good at it as I am today. And that's not to say I'm great about it. I'm just simply saying you mature and grow and you begin to recognize there's value in being romantic. When you really care about your spouse, don't you want to give them what they want and need? Yeah. It's not about you. It's about them. Now, the way it works is the more you do that, the more it ends up coming back to you as well. And that's the beautiful thing of the way what God creates. I love the fact that when God shares things with us and you actually throw your all into it, it works, and it works powerfully. Men, consider what Eros is and how well you express that to your wife. Do you understand what romance is? Go study it. Learn what it is. Ask your wife what's romantic to her, just to get an idea. Now, she's the one having to think of everything, because that's cheating. That's not, you're leaning on her. That's not going to work. That's going to blow up on you. Talk to your wife and ask her to share what she believes it is. But this is fun to learn from one another and to talk about how to make your marriage more rewarding, or at least it should be. As I alluded to in the first message, and I'll reinforce again today, the more we learn and understand how to give love in the ways that we are discussing, all of these ways, the more positively our intimate part of the marriage is impacted. So we'll talk more about this in a little bit, but it seems that in so many relationships, people try to solve their problems with sex and then work backwards. Well, if I can just get a good sex life, then we can work backwards and fix the other things. That's not how it works. Now, that's where many people turn, but you understand why when you read articles like what I just read to you as well. Learning how to love in all other areas of life will in turn strengthen the physical aspect of love. Now, let me give you three keys to developing romantic love. Number one, climate. Number two, imagination. And number three, surrender. I'm going to talk about all of these. I'm going to give it a little quick little snippet on each, and then I'm going to actually address each. First of all, let's take climate. This is the temperature of your relationship. If you're interested in your spouse, the temperature of your relationship is warm, isn't it? If the temperature is cold, that's definitely not a good thing. Romantic love does not occur in a cold relationship. Secondly, imagination. If the temperature or climate of your relationship is warm, you are also thinking more, which means you are more imaginative. You're willing to be more creative and more imaginative. The environment is warmer. Now, you use your imagination more. You're creative in coming up with activities that you know your mate likes. Your language is more creative. You pay attention to what excites them so you can bring it up in conversation. You show that you are engaged in the relationship in such a way that your partner can see and know that you are fully engaged in it. And then lastly, surrender. And again, I'm going to talk about each of these in a moment. Surrender, you're happy to serve the other person. For example, he'll get your car door for you as his wife, or she'll make him, you, special treats. You'll both give creative gifts to one another. Colleen has always been better at this than me. And sometimes it's bugged me to the point, and I've worked hard to try to make sure I get something really creative for her. There's been fewer and further between, I guarantee you that. I don't think I'll ever quite catch her. But I do think about it a lot more than I ever used to. Part of that hopefully comes with maturity as well, when you love and genuinely care for someone. But you both give creative gifts to one another. You are about giving to the other person because the climate is good, which in turn engages the imagination, and that then brings upon or leads to surrender. Now, for many people, the climate and the imagination changes when they get married, and obviously that then leads to a change in willingness to surrender. Now, you've probably heard people say or have said yourself, just wait till they aren't newlyweds anymore. That'll change everything. And they mean that not in a positive way, unfortunately. You know, one of the things I tell young couples when we're going to, before marriage, young, and they're getting married for the first time, so on. I said, I know you guys are probably thinking, well, I'd sure like to just live on love. Now, let me just tell you something. I'm living on love, too. And I love it. But please understand, love's not going to pay the bills. So there's going to be a whole lot more than living on love. But you shouldn't lose the, in my opinion, living on love too. That should actually continue to grow and get better and stronger. Prince Philip, consort of the Queen, at least that was the case before they both died, was quoted as saying, when a man opens the car door for his wife, it's either a new car or a new wife. Now, it's meant to be funny, which it is, but it's also sad. What happens to that romance? Another quote by Helen Rowland, she said, before marriage, a man will lie awake thinking about something you said, and after marriage, he'll fall asleep before you finish saying it. Pretty accurate, I think, too. Clearly, the romance isn't quite what it once was. Or perhaps, let's face it, when we're 20-something, and now we're 60 or 70 or whatever, that has an impact as well, obviously. As I said a moment ago, the climate in our lives is very telling. Eros is emotional and sensitive and requires a warm climate to flourish. For example, do you rub your mate's feet because they like that? Do you write them poetry because they enjoy that? Do you surprise them with a small gift periodically? It reflects you put a lot of thought and care into that gift. Let's go to Ephesians 4, if you would. Ephesians 4. Here in Ephesians chapter 4, I'd like to take a look at verse 32, which I believe is the final verse of that particular chapter. Verse 32 says, be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. Now, I want to focus on the first part of this verse. Obviously, this verse, first of all, was meant and designed to be with how we treat everybody, not just our spouse. But since we're talking about marriage here, and we're talking about Eros in particular as well, I would like you to think about what's shared here in the first part of that verse. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted. Sad how many times couples reach a point where they just aren't very kind to one another. They're just not tender-hearted. Sad. Shouldn't be that way. Again, we cannot change the other person. So if the other person refuses to change, that kind of ties our hands a little bit, but we still know we answer to God, so we do the best that we can in a circumstance or situation like that. But for those of us that are not in that situation, we need to think about what's being shared here. There's a lot we can take from this. It's designed to point out how we should treat our fellow human beings. But the first phrase in the verse also addresses the concept, like I say, of Eros. We need to be tenderhearted. He also wants us to be kind and tenderhearted towards our mate as no other, frankly. Show your creativity in your relationship and how you communicate with your spouse. And how and what you share with them. Fellow family members, it's our responsibility to project a warm, positive attitude towards our mate and a mindset that shows we can be romantic. For guys, it may feel like, I don't know, I just don't even know how to be romantic. Don't be scared of it. Just listen to what it is that they're sharing at different times. And if you're listening closely, you'll pick on some things that, hey, I can do this because I know she likes that. And that will be romantic. Ask God to help remove any negative feelings that you may have had in the past or still have. If necessary, make a new beginning in your relationship. Your giving of kindness will go a long way in producing a warm climate for romance. Now, certainly under climate would come grooming. Since Eros is sensitive to sight and scent, our grooming or lack thereof can affect the climate. Different cultures have different standards and expectations along these lines. In this country, we tend to be very conscious of how our body smells, so we use deodorant, perfume, deodorant soap, nice-smelling shampoo. For us, this helps make the climate for romance right, unless, of course, we are allergic to such fragrances. Some cultures, that's not... it's not the same at all. What about the look of love? The look of love. Let's go to Song of Solomon, chapter 4. Song of Solomon, chapter 4. And let's take a look at verse 9. You have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. We were here earlier. You have ravished my heart with one look of your eyes, with one link of your necklace. Solomon tells us here of the power of romantic eye contact. Couples who love one another look at one another. It's been said that the eye is the mirror of the soul. It's also true that the eye is the mirror of love. Why not send the message, I love you, from your eyes to your mate's heart? Most of the time I go to bed after my wife does. She tends to get up a little earlier than I do, and I tend to go to bed later than she does. Every once in a while, I'll crawl into bed when she's asleep and find myself just simply looking at her. And as I do, I may be thinking of all kinds of things, from what we did that day to the days we were dating to the blessing of being grandparents. There's a flood of different things that can cross your mind because you have shared something with that person that you have not shared with anybody else that makes it so special and unique and beautiful. I know, too much information for teens, I get it. Here's the bottom line. When you love your mate deeply, you find yourself doing these things, and it is beautiful. Nothing warms the romantic climate like the giving of affection. It seems that the age we now live in has been stripped of its natural affection. This is a much colder and aloof society. Think about how the neighbor relationship has changed. At one time, everybody knew their neighbors. How many neighbors do you know today? It's totally different, isn't it? Unfortunately, many marriages also reflect this coldness. The only way this changes is to do something about it. Kissing has always been a symbol of affection and warmth. Why not make kissing your official form of greeting your mate? Kiss in the morning to start the day, kiss at night are good ways to start and end each day. Song of Solomon chapter 1, and notice verse 2. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Solomon's bride desired his kisses. You've probably got some kids here who are saying, that's in the Bible? Yes, that's part of God's inspired word. It's designed to help us understand that God intended the marriage relationship to be incredibly special in every possible way. God covers everything in the Bible. Now, the second aspect of developing romantic love is to use imagination. So we're talking about temperature, now we're going into imagination. Romance is where? It's all in the mind. The imaginings of your mind can be a powerful tool in becoming more romantic towards your mate. Matthew 5, I alluded to earlier in verse 28, where God's very clear about where we are to keep our mind and where we are not to put our minds. But let's go to Proverbs 5 and verse 15. Proverbs 5, verse 15 says, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Verse 19, as a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. Even when your mate is out of sight, never let him or her be out of your mind. Early in our marriage, Colleen went to Australia for a couple of weeks to spend some time with her good friend from college days who was from Australia and went back to Australia after college. And I was apparently one or both Sabbaths. I wasn't in the ministry at the time, but I was leading songs maybe one week, giving sermon another week, whatever it was. And so one of the individuals, apparently I was sharing that I was looking forward to her coming back. Now, I didn't think I was over the top with it by any means, but the individual, when Colleen came back after a couple weeks of being gone, so, Colleen, I am so glad you're back. We are so tired of hearing about Mark complain because you've been gone. So either he exaggerated or I was saying more than I realized I was saying or something, but you got to understand as well, guess what they didn't have back in the 80s that they have today? Cell phones, internet, etc. We didn't just, so for the time she's gone, we had no contact. Now, here's the point. Today, I mean, my wife, as you know, a year ago, she was gone for a month, and that led to the time of her dad's death. The year before that, she was there for, I don't know, 6-8 weeks, something like that, I think. Maybe it was even longer than a month last year, and then her mom died that year. So we were apart for quite a while from one another. But we do have phones, and we did talk every day. It does make a difference. So, I mean, even though you're apart, you're on each other's minds. You're discussing all kinds of things. And obviously part of the time you're on the phone is certainly romantic conversation as well. You know, use your heart and imagination to create positive, pleasing thoughts about your mate. Think about your mate's attractive qualities. That's part of the problem. Sometimes people get upset about something and it's like they just forget altogether what the attractive qualities of their mate are. Hear his or her warm and reassuring voice. See that beautiful smile of hers. Take mental stock of your mate's inner as well as outer beauty. You know, when we use our mind and imagination, our thoughts will reinforce our feelings and actions of romantic love. And if we do this, we will find that we also surrender as we move into the next third aspect of Eros, of romantic love. Eros requires a desire to surrender and give of ourselves completely to our mate. There's not another person on the earth that we do this with, just our mate. Eros requires a desire to surrender and give of ourselves completely to our mate, and this, of course, means not withholding romantic love, not sexual love, although that shouldn't be withheld either, but romantic love. As I said at the beginning of this point, women in particular need this, and it's important that a good husband provide that. By the way, I'm not trying to indicate that women are off the hook. It's just that when most people think of this, they think of it through the lens of the typical man-woman relationship. The truth is that both should be seeking to improve and share romantic love. So this brings us to the final point that I'll bring up today in these series of sermons, and that is the fifth way to love our mate is with sexual love. Now, I'm not asking you this looking for an answer at all. But if asked the question, how is your love life, what would your answer be? Now, I certainly hope your answer would be something that God would be pleased with, and you would too. Now, I'm smart enough to understand things change with age and time, but there's still intimacy of some sort, or should be, no matter where we are in life. The truth is that God intended this aspect of love to be pleasurable and fulfilling just as much as the other aspects. Now, what I'm about to give you now is what people pay the big bucks for at the newsstand and checkout counter at the grocery store. You remember how to have a better sex life, like I was talking about, 10 ways to make sex better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, actually, here it is. Here's the advice. The place to start improving your intimacy life is with the application of the first 4 points that I shared in these two messages. That's how you will affect, in a positive way, this fifth and final point. Truthfully, sexual love has been placed last in the series of points because its success, in large part, is dependent on the other areas, not the other way around. If you are to improve that, first, improve the rest of your marriage. There, I just gave you a couple of sentences, what people write entire books to try to share with people. Actually, sadly, most people don't even connect marriage and sex together anymore. Instead, most seem to see them as completely separate issues. You don't need to be married to have sex, so to the point is moot. At least that's what most think. God thinks otherwise and makes that clear. Of course, here in God's church, we are interested in following God's instruction. The narrow path, the more difficult way that not many choose. But boy, is it rewarding. Now, of course, here it is important that we recognize this. So consider, if we desire to have a great life of intimacy, don't we find it much easier to want to give that to each other when we've already been spending time and energy and attention on giving in all other aspects of marriage? Remember what I talked about a while ago about how much is up here and how important this is? That's what helps with everything. Now, we know that because we talk about the battle that we are in with Satan, because he wants our mind. And we got to say, no, you can't have it. Well, that includes in things like this within our marriage, for sure. So that's what brings us close and desirous of being together. We can never afford to forget that when we do things God's way, it always works and leads to the best outcome. Again, the attention is on give, not get. We could go out here and buy a book that tells us all kinds of things to try to supposedly perk up our life of intimacy, but it isn't going to just happen as we would like until we get everything in the proper order. Just as our relationship with God must come before our marriage, our children come after our marriage. The same is true of sexual love. It's better when and only when first implement the other aspects. Now, the prudish Victorian approach to sex is one of being necessary evils of life is wrong, obviously, just as the modern new morality is also wrong. To properly give sexual love to your mate, you need God's positive attitude towards it. Genesis chapter 1. God created sex, and he says it's good in a marriage. Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. And went on from there. Notice the first part of verse 28. God blessed them and God said to them, that's what I was just reading, excuse me. What you will find over time is that as you mature in these other aspects of your marriage, you will also mature in this area as well. And it is with this maturity that you can appreciate the sexual experience as no book can tell you, but instead as God created to be something joyful and special that is between you and one other person only, and that is your mate. Hebrews 13. Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews 13, and notice verse 4. Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Now, the word bed that's used here, Paul used the Greek word koite, which literally means cohabitation or coitus. So the translators of the Authorized Version of the Bible were ashamed to use the word coitus, so they used bed. And the Revised Authorized Version perpetuates this translation. But God is not ashamed of this beautiful act of love, and at one point neither were Adam and Eve. Think about what's given there. Let's just go back and turn to Genesis chapter 2 for a moment and see this. Genesis chapter 2. You know, it's amazing how prudish sometimes people can be. They don't want to talk about meanwhile, they're doing everything that is just ridiculous beyond the wildest imaginations. But you can't talk about anything publicly that would be in the right way, the way God intended. That's really sad if you ask me. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 25. They were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Now, Satan got to them in the Garden of Eden, as we well know. But until that time, they were in no way ashamed of how they looked or the act of lovemaking. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians 7. And let's take a look here at verse 3. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. We have a God-given responsibility to give to our spouse what they need when we're talking about sexual love and satisfaction to our mate. Our body belongs to our mate, and our mate's body belongs to us. Notice that here in verse 4. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. With that authority comes the responsibility to take care of your mate's body as it is your own, as if it were your own. Again, everything with God is about caring for one another. Hold your place here. We're going to come back to this. Ephesians 5. Let's go over there for a second. Ephesians 5, verse 28. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. We should never, ever want to abuse our mate or our mate's body. We are to handle it with tender, loving care. We do everything we can to give them what they want because we love them. Find out what it is they really like and don't care for as much. And by all means, we should never refuse to give sexual love to our mate or to use it as a weapon or leverage. That wouldn't be of God either. Back to 1 Corinthians 7, verse 5. Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Refusing to give sexual love can irritate, agitate, cause frustration and tension in a marriage. With an attitude of withholding or refusal, this is an attitude of selfishness over seeking to love and please our mate. Now, I should say, however, this is every bit as selfish for one to insist on sexual pleasure under any and all circumstances. Obviously, there are times that it simply is not appropriate, or perhaps the timing of stresses of life in particular are off-putting. So it's neither right to force nor to withhold. With everything with God is all about love and care and concern for one another, isn't it? Selflessness, not selfishness. In the New English Version of the Bible, Song of Solomon 5 and verse 1 says, "Eat, friends, and drink until you are drunk with love." So just as the other four ways to love your mate, sexual love, when done in the spirit it was intended by God, produces great joy and fulfillment. Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 9 for a moment. Ecclesiastes 9. Ecclesiastes 9, I'd like to notice verse 9. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for it is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. God's admonishment here is to live joyfully with our wives, men. This will take place if we live the five steps that we have gone through in the last couple of messages on this topic. Obviously, this is true of the women as well. Again, express your love to your mate through agape. Express your love through your mate through filio. Through the love of belonging, through romantic love, and express sexual love to your mate. Now, if we follow, live, and pray about this, we will find that our marriage will mature, and of course, we individually will mature also. Perhaps this is really what we need to think about in the big picture. Isn't success in virtually all aspects of life contingent upon our drive and our discipline in obedience to God? Isn't it really when it gets right down to it? When our relationship with God is mature, then we will be able to have a much more mature relationship in our marriage. Sometimes that is really what we need more than anything. Now, obviously, if you're married to someone who does not know the truth of God or does not care to know, then there are definitely some added challenges. Doesn't mean you can't have a successful and fulfilling and enriching marriage, but it just means there might be a few more challenges because you have different minds when it comes to what the truth of God is. But everything we've been going through is still the truth, and if practiced, is very rewarding. We recognize 1 Corinthians 13, let's turn there, to be the love chapter. So I would like to close today by looking at a few verses here in this chapter. And as we do, think of this in the light of your mate. Now, normally I would say, you know, obviously we want to look at this in terms of how we treat one another, and that still is germane, no doubt about it. We should do that. But because we've been talking about the subject we have here in marriage, I want us to really think about this in regards to our mate, our spouse. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. Think about, is this you? Is this how your relationship is? Is this how it works? Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. It is not puffed up. Again, I know we focus on this in the big picture of everybody, and rightfully so, but How does this fit within our marriage? What am I seeing when I read this that is or is not in my marriage? Verse 5, love does not behave rudely. Am I rude to my spouse? Because if I am, I'm not doing what God tells me to do. And frankly, that's going to impact my ability to have a quality relationship. The quality it should be. Love does not seek its own. Well, there you go. And we've been seeing that as we've gone through this. It's not provoked. It thinks no evil. Love does not rejoice in sin or iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Love bears all things. Okay, so they do something that hurts or is just thoughtless. How much do we love them? Well, they did that. Now that's it. I can't take it. No, sometimes we take it on the chin. We bear something, don't we? Because we love them. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. You know, you may not always get the results that you would like, but you can sleep well at night knowing you've done what God's commanded you to do. When you practice love, you can't go wrong. There's times I will share something with somebody and trying to help them get through something in particular, and they may choose to do it, and they may choose not to. Either way, I'm able to sleep better at night if I know I've done my part in trying to convey to them what it is that perhaps needed to be heard or needed to be covered. In our marriage, we will undoubtedly face opportunity after opportunity to put this right here into practice. There will be times that we will fall flat on our face, but there will be other times that we live this and great happiness will be the reward. When we say, I love you to our mate, do we recognize what we are really saying? You know, if you're in a habit of doing this, that means you don't necessarily always think about it in the deep sense. You're just reconfirming, I love you. But it's important we take time to think about those words and what that means and what God holds us to. Do we understand what all that entails? We can never really, by the way, sneakily win someone's heart, as the article of the magazine implied. If we give mature love to our mate, we will find that we also have their heart. Marriage can and should be the most beautiful of all physical relationships. God wants and expects us to have respect for one another and all kinds of fun along the way. Make a disciplined effort to continually strengthen this crucial relationship by sharing with one another what God designed us to share.